And that's exactly why these strict environments are inducive to practice. And the ones that are more comfortable are not so inducive.
But in regards to stream entries, what I'm saying is whether they have, I mean, stream entries has not such a strong identification with body and mind, right? But still, there is a lot of identification compared to an arahant or to an anagami. So, to which extent, this is another question, you know, should, if you want to recognize a stream entry, to which extent, you know, should this identification be? How can you say, you know, is identified 80%, 60%, 40%? How can you find out?
Where do you want to know? The moment it's gone, you know.
No, but I mean, it's extremely...
You remember, you know, sometimes I talk about that. It's not very clear. The stream enter still has the full matter of greed and hate.
Yeah.
But the
full
100%. Here's the first fruit is coming. The full measure of greed and hate. But he has as a protection his sila.
Yeah.
So his morality and his virtue. That protects him from not going down into the hell.
That's
the difference.
When you read in books, theoretically, they say that a stream enterer has, to some extent, overcome this identification with body and mind. There is less, you know?
Yes, and then when you read what Watanachan Mahapur, or when you hear what Watanachan Mahapur said, then he says this is wrong. Yes.
How is that?
Well, you didn't read The Life of Inequality, the last chapter. There he says, the identification of the body is not gone. It's only eliminated in the anapana.
Yes, we know this.
Yes, so...
No, in Harahant he says, not even in the anakami.
No, anakami, its identification with the body is gone.
Yeah, body is gone, you're right.
Yes.
But this was my previous question. To what extent because you start as a stream enterer, they have to somehow, you know. Yes, because even us, the normal human beings, have somehow, you know, let go a little bit of this identification. You can see for yourselves, we can see for ourselves. Yes, a little bit. It's not like it was 20, 30 years ago. There was a total identification with body and mind. Now it's different.
Talk for yourself.
It doesn't matter.
Yes.
People who
no,
who
talk.
Practice.
You know, if you talk about practice, we talk. Have to talk about our personal experience. You cannot talk about other people. So don't mix it in. So that then it becomes much more clear. When I talk about my experience, and I talk about my experience, and my experience are not the experience of others.
Sure.
And my path of practice is not the path of practice of others.
Sure.
But it has some similarity. When I look at my path of practice, then it's very similar to what I understand of the path of practice of Tanachan Man and Tanachan Mahabhua.
Yeah.
So they're going in line, they go pretty much in line, and also the experience that are along this path are pretty much in line. Any other than this, I cannot teach, I cannot talk about, because I don't know.
But for instance, can you see for yourself in your own practice that the way you could identify yourself, you know, with the body and with the mind of, say, 20 years ago?
Of course, you know, it does.
It's changed.
Yeah, it changes.
Right.
And if you do not practice correctly, it will not change. But if you practice correctly, it will change. It will lessen. You know the ten fetters.
Yes.
The ten fetters, one is doubt.
Yes.
the first three are.
Yeah.
One is doubt, the other one is not keeping the precepts or fiddling with the precepts. One day keeping it, the next day breaking it, next day keeping it, and the next day breaking it. That is the second fetter. And the third fetter is the identification that I and the body are the same thing.
Mm.
It's not it's this identification with the body, that I and the body is the same thing. It's the same thing as if you view a car and the driver as one unit.
Right.
So this is the identification.
I'm talking about
that,
this.
Okay. If you talk about that, but that has nothing to do with greed and hate.
Exactly.
Okay.
And I'm not taking greed and hatred as, you know, into the picture.
It's difficult to say, you know. A stream enderer has a very deep experience. He has seen Nibbana for the first time. And he knows that it was different. He might not know if he has not gone through the deep state of samadhi. In the deep state of samadhi, the kilesas are at rest, completely at rest. He doesn't see them. But Nibbana, the five khandhas are gone. And that's different. So people who go into the deep state of samadhi and come out, they think they are in love. And it changes their views, of course, because they know there is something else. But it's not the stream entry of Nibbana. What happens when you enter the stream is you have this. And that holds only for a second. Or even less than a second. When you come out, you know that there was something very special. And you might understand how this I, how this ego is built. You might understand it. You might have the experience where you actually see it in slow motion, how the whole concept of this whole world, how this life, you know, hides the fact that we are not there. Not there. This can be the case. I'm not sure. Some people might have this experience.
And then.
So this is one thing. You understand. And this understanding nobody can take away. If you align with the Buddhist practice, if you're in another kind of practice, if you're a Christian or do some practice, then you might not understand what happened. When you have a good teacher that can explain it, then he said, it might be. But what happens after that? So it's Magga-pala. So there's a Magga is the past moment. You see Nibbana. You understand this is Nibbana. This is your true home. And when you come out, you see how this whole castle of self is built up. Constantly built up. But you see it very in slow motion. And this is your understanding. And then what happens after it is power, is the fruit. And the fruit is a waterfall of wisdom. That can keep up to a month. Because then you reconsider everything you heard about Dhamma and you understand it on a different level.
And then the urge
can start or it can delay, you know, it does not. But you will be gone. You will always remember it. It depends on your experience, it depends on the environment you were in while you were having this experience. And it might make you go faster or it might make you go slow. But you will never forget it. You might forget it for 2 or 3 months or 4 months, you know, get lost, but then you come back. But it has not touched greed and hate. Greed and hate is in the full measure. And if you remember what I said, the Sotapanna first is the first person who sees his next path or his next work. So he sees for the first time clearly greed and hate. This is greed, greed in me, this is greed in me. The Sakadagami is very difficult to see. Because there, greed and hate is cut up to half. That's all what is there. But the Sakadagami has the same experience. He still sees. But he still sees it even clearer. Not only greed and hate within himself, but he sees it in other people as well.
Stays in this state of realization?
No. This realization is once, but it has an impact like a bomb. And this impact is never forgotten. But the kilesas, the moment you drop a stone into the water, it hits it, it goes to the ground and sees it, and then the water closes up. Or like Tanachan says, the wee duck, covers the clear water. You don't see it. But you know that the water is fresh, and you know where you can get it.
But it's not by force one can get it back to the state.
Tanachan says you can. Whenever he wants to come back, but then he needs a good samadhi, then he can go back. From my own experience, I don't know.
But this is the third stage of samadhi, isn't it? When you can by choice come.
No. It has nothing to do with samadhi. In Nibbana, the five khandhas are gone. But you don't even know that the five khandhas are gone, you just know that it's different. That samadhi, when you know it before, the deep state of samadhi, then you know it's different. It has a different impact. And Nibbana must, where everything that is within this threefold universe, that exists within this threefold universe, has to disappear. So the khandhas are of this anicca anatta dukkha, are out of these four elements. So they have to disappear if you really want to see Nibbana. And this, when they all disappear, that makes the impact. That is like an atomic bomb.
That's what you said.
She assumes she has. It's too late.
May I ask a question about an experience?
Yeah, sure.
If one falls into you had this similar question last time. When we go in a certain state of samadhi, in meditation, I had a very, very heavy experience from pain and broken heart pain stuff. And for weeks I went into this, who is behind this pain? Who is suffering actually? Mm-hmm. Who is there? Mm-hmm. And the more I went there, really in a few seconds, there was nobody, nothing. That was exactly this experience of non-existence. Exactly, I was so amazed actually. Mm-hmm. I slipped through, it was a few seconds. Mm-hmm. I had no time for nothing. Mm-hmm. And when I came out of it since today, that's one of the reasons why I'm here now. I can't go on in the old way I was living. And what kind of experience is this?
What happened afterward?
I didn't have any pain anymore, any problems from this experience before. Was the feeling of lightness, to being very light, and seeing very clear my path is going straight. There's nothing else to do anymore. There's nothing to work for, to earn money, to just to support this body, and a little bit after some weeks there came some depression also, and then, but I always took myself out of this and said, I know why I'm here, like this, and yeah, up and down, but actually very clear within the deep inner self. There's no question anymore.
So, it's more likely that you had the rest or the citta because of all this dukkha retracted itself into the deep state of samadhi. And the deep state of samadhi is unification, holiness. So you're back at your home. You feel like you're back at home. When you come out, it has also a big impact. For people who never experience it, it has a big impact. And it comes, and it can happen to people who have a lot of dukkha, or rather, have a lot of worries and things, and they just fed up. I know an old friend of mine, once I visited him, he was so overloaded with work, and then one day he came home at 10 o'clock, and he just stared at the watch, and stared and stared and stared, and then suddenly an hour, 3 or 4 hours had gone. And he had this kind of deep experience where the mind completely shut down. And he didn't know what it was, so he asked him. But that happens, that's no methodical, that's no trained happening. It just happens because we have so much dukkha and we want to have a relief of this dukkha.
Is it possible that happens spontaneously?
Yes, it can happen spontaneously. It can happen, the way you have a lot of dukkha, can happen anywhere. Now, if that happened to us before, it's rather difficult to get the method, to go back.
Because
it just happened because of our intense effort, because we really let go. The dukkha was so great that you really let go. And if it doesn't click in your mind, then you know exactly what you have to do. You have to sit through pain.
Through the pain.
So you have to sit not only 3 hours or 4 hours, you have to sit through the whole night. Yes. You have to force it.
Yeah.
If you don't have enough dukkha, you have to force it.
Yeah. Some people say that, they put the legs in a way that it will be painful so that they get dukkha in order to work with and get...
You don't have to force, just sitting there, just comfortably sitting there. If you sit for 3 or 4 hours, if you sit for 3 hours, the first wave of pain is gone. And if it's the right wave of pain, in the end, it's so big that you think you will die.
Exactly.
And if you go beyond this, then the pain will disappear. And after another 3 hours, the next wave is coming. Then you think you burn in fire. You will burn in hell.
So I will not come to this state again unless I really go...
Unless you force
it.
If we are so... Normally... How? Because in the old time, forced themselves, they went in front of a tiger.
Yeah. Because there are other ways also.
Yes.
Yeah.
Fear is one thing.
Fear,
pain is one
stress,
thing.
This is
stress,
to trigger what?
Normal
to trigger
stress,
samadhi.
Breakdown.
Yes.
Yeah. It breaks down.
But it's only temporary. It's forcing it. You don't know how to get back there again.
That's why you force it and force it and force it.
Sounds like just going out and somebody taking drugs just to pass themselves out.
Think about it correctly and then ask again.
Some people can reach very high states.
If you don't force the mind, if you don't force the mind to be at one point.
But the comprehension is not there most of the time.
Yeah, you're taking on more defilements.
Yeah.
But
through drugs.
Quiet down. Not inside discussions. If you don't force the mind to stay on one object, it will go away. No matter what way you use to force,
Some people, you know, or persuade, you know, whatever nature our mind triggers. Some people need some more force, some people need some more persuading, but the people who persuade, you know, sometimes need some force, and the people who force, and sometimes need some time of persuading. It's never one. If you don't do that, the mind will never stay. So that's why the bhikkhus in the older times use fruit method. They sit in the front of a abyss, and they know if they get tired, what they usually did, they will fall down, and that's the end of their life. And just this fear keeps them awake. Or the fear of the tiger, or the hearing of the tiger, will stir them up. And they have no way, no place to hold themselves except the Buddha. Like Thanachan Chop, he went through a forest, he was wandering, and then in the evening, about 4 o'clock in the evening, he came to a village, and he wanted to go to the next village, but there was a huge forest between these two villages, and the villager said, if somebody is going in the night through that, nobody has ever come out. Why? Because they are ferocious tigers. That's interesting. Oh, that looks good. So he walked in. And the moment dawn came up, there was a path, and he saw all the footprints. Along the path, lots of them. So he walked and walked. It came dawn, and then he saw a tiger, a big tiger. He said it was like a small horse. Came out in front of him. He had his lantern already lit because it was becoming dark. So he stood. And then he looked around because he heard some noise. And another tiger was behind him, both crouching to jump on him. So he just repeated Buddha, Buddha, and the next thing he noticed was that the sun was coming out. His lantern has gone out, he stood in the same place, the tigers have disappeared. He was standing in deep samadhi for about 10 hours.
And walk on.
Ajahn Chah. And most of the people, or most of the monks, because ordinary people don't do that, most of the monks who have experienced that with a tiger, either being sitting on the path of a tiger where they know, or sitting in the cave where they know the tiger is coming, have experienced it. Their chitta was so afraid. That they went into deep state of samadhi for at least 10 or 12.
Fear.
Fear is a very, very good. We're all afraid of it.
Mm. But at the same time, fear can stop you from meditation because of your worries and.
But that's, and you know, yeah.
The first
stage,
yeah.
Fear and pain are the more difficult things. The fear prevents you from actually going into upachara samadhi. Because you're afraid, you know, that you lose control.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yes. And if you don't overcome that fear, you will stuck there forever, for the rest of your life. So you just say, okay, whatever happens, if I die, I will die. At least I die in a good state.
I haven't come to that.
It comes up. The moment you're close to, the moment the breath disappears, you're afraid. But when you go to sleep, you're never afraid to wake up. But you could die in your sleep. So, why are you not afraid?
The night I slept, when I went with Ajahn Thich to Tudong last year, I slept outside, and I had only the mosquito net, you know, those you just put on the ground. That was my very first time that I dare stay during the night in a place in a bamboo place. And I tell you, I was scared, much scared of snakes, because my great fear is snakes, not so much tiger. Even if, of course, you
know. Well, if you see a tiger, you know it's crossed.
Sure, but you're for me, if you tell me, do you prefer seeing a tiger or prefer to see a snake? I tell you a tiger. I mean, I know she can eat me, you know, but I prefer a tiger, no matter what. Anyhow, I was there, and I was scared of the snake, and I couldn't help but think, you know, I kept thinking about snakes, to the point where I say, well, I'm not going to sleep the whole night, if, you know, or I'm going to meditate, or no sleep. But at some point I say, well, I mean, let it be. I mean, I can sleep now. I meditate for some time, but always, you know, with attentive to any little sound, and so many sound, because the bamboo leaves on the ground, you know, they can be moved by the ant. So every single I was there with my ear. And in the end, you know, I just gave in to sleep, really. Mm-hmm. But I checked within. I said, okay, let it be. And I felt tranquil after that, mm-hmm. you know. I accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, now I want to sleep. And I go to sleep.
Yeah, but that normally happens, you know, if we accept the situation. If we accept our karma, we always feel tranquil.
Yeah.
If you're in a situation that we think, you know, it's unfair, unjust, or...
But the following night, I didn't go out to sleep there.
Because you still were afraid.
Yes, exactly.
See?
I didn't want to go through the same experience and having to do
See?
The same thing.
That is fear.
Yeah, no.
But wouldn't it become less if you continue?
No. Only if you come, if you go through fear. Mm. Then it's gone. If you go through pain, once you really go through pain, that doesn't mean that it works for the first time. Some people need 100 times or 10,000 times, you know, to go through pain. Until they understand. And the understanding is the only thing that relieves us. The understanding of the fear, or of the cause of fear, the understanding of the cause of dukkha, the understanding of the cause of pain. That is the meaning. So we just don't sit down like yogis in pain and just go through the pain, but we investigate the pain. So, and it's the same thing, investigate the fear. Tenacha was talking about a disease that wiped out four to eight people a day, and he was staying at the cremation ground, and he caught it. He knew he caught it. And he was stuck. He wasn't yet around. So I said, okay, if I die, I will die. And then he went through the night. And the next day he was gone. But he saw, you know, every day, you know, four or five corpses brought up with the same disease. He knew the origin of the disease, and he told him. And he was still afraid at the stage of Anakami, you know, to get stuck, you know, to die before he got around. But that was a different kind of fear.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the fear, you know, of the ordinary people to die, because the Anagami doesn't have any fear to die.
Mm-hmm.
It's not death itself, but it's the fear, you know, not getting to run one's goal, to get stuck. Anagami still, you know, can still live to 50,000 years, up to 50,000 years, until you get to arahantship.
And there is a limit, 50,000 years.
Yes.
Where is it?
10,000 years per stage.
Oh.
There are five different stages.
Oh.
And the first stage is the rupa, or attachment to the rupa chanas. The second is attachment to the formless chanas. The third is attachment to, what is it?
Conceit.
Is it conceit? Yes, conceit, restlessness in the last one, savitcha. And if you think of avijja as blindness and not darkness, that's not the avijja you're talking about. When you see it, it's a dialogue.
The avijja is doubt?
No, avijja is
ignorance.
Well, ignorance.
Avijja, yeah, avijja in India. Mm-hmm.
Well, what is ignorance? It's all. It's all. It's everything.
Yeah.
It's not only ignorance. It's delusion. It's magic. It's everything that you can imagine.
Everything.
The whole universe consists of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why if it has the power to create this universe, if it has the power to keep us in this threefold universe, then imagine.
How powerful it is.
Yeah. And imagine how difficult it is to step through this kind of delusion.
Mm-hmm.
If you're Christians, if you imagine this to be God, then you have to step through God.
We were saying before, you know, imagine how fortunate I feel, you know, so grateful, you know, to the person that really helped me so much to come out of this ignorance, you know, not just this step. To be in this place, to have this teaching, I mean, such a, you know, a gift, a precious gift. I can never repay, you know, my debt or feeling of gratitude to this person. Never.
I have one question about this investigation, because I hear and read it everywhere. Is it now the same, what we just say, you go through and you just know by the experience, or you also analyze where does it come from, who is the one who is suffering, who is, and somehow, somewhere you come to it that there's actually nothing to it.
That's a talk on itself, you know, that's not just a simple
answer.
Yeah,
no, it's
okay. When you haven't been there when I was talking about investigation, I was putting up a few talks about investigation. In course, it's anicca, anatta, dukkha, the three characteristics, what we investigate. It's the five khandhas that we investigate, rupa, vedana, sanya, sankhara, and vijnana, and that's the fourth element. That is what we investigate. That's what we're trying to break apart. So investigation is breaking it down to make it easier, to make it simpler to understand. To understand the process. When I said before, you know, avijja is a magician, you know, he just pulls up all this different colored cloth or the rabbit or sauce of people, you know, and then puts them back together. So this magician has an enormous power. So we have to understand his tricks. And that is the way of an investigation. The understanding is not taking place in our mind, the understanding is taking place in our heart. So we have to teach the heart. The way of wisdom is the way of teaching the heart. You see? Do you understand? No, I don't understand it yet. So you have to do it. It's like you do an experiment. A physicist does an experiment. If he is not mindful all the time, he will not understand it and he has to do it over again. And that's why some of the people where the mindfulness, where sati is not enough, they have to do it 10,000 times. If sati is good enough, if it catches every step of the process, he needs to go only through pain one time until he understands. But if sati is not enough, he must do it, you know, 100 times, 1,000 times, and a million. Until he understands. And the understanding is taking place in the heart. And that's the only place where we can adopt. As long as the understanding takes place in the mind, it might be helpful, it might not be helpful, but we can adopt. That is not wisdom. That is knowledge. Knowledge has its use for going on the path, but wisdom is the force that cuts through the path. So when we talk before about the fetters, you know, if greed is reduced by 5% or 10% or doubt is reduced by 5, you cut it down and it becomes less and less and lesser, and the last cut cuts the fetter. So if the big if the fetter is like a huge rope, and we take a knife and cut it, but we constantly cut it, becomes smaller and thinner and thinner and thinner until the last blow it breaks. So it depends on our knife. If it's sharp enough, if the knife is not sharp enough, and the knife is the wisdom, and sati is the sharp. So if you don't have sati, there's no use. Neither for samadhi nor for investigation. Satipanya are the superpowers that we have to go beyond avijja, that we can deal with. And panya is only developed. Wisdom is only developed by investigation. As I did for myself, you understand it? No, not yet. Okay, you have to do it. Until the understanding is clear in the heart. Only then. The moment I can doubt my understanding, you know, I know it's not right. Understand. And it seems so perfect, you know, even after I've done it 100 times, you know, it seems so clear, you know, I don't want to do it. If I feel I don't want to do it, then I know I have not understood it correctly. The heart is the only thing that can let go. And the heart lets only go the moment it understands it completely. So don't worry about the mind if it understands. If the mind understands, you know, even if a reasonable person understands, you know, it's alcohol is not very good for us, he still drinks. If he really understands it, you know, what it does to the process, what it does to the body, what it does to the mind, there's not the slightest interest.
Same with cigarettes.
Yes, I did it with cigarettes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Me also.
Yeah.
You can offer me 10,000 times, I'm not interested anymore. But also no aversion. It's just completely neutral.
Okay.
Completely, I can sit with smokers, no problem for me, but I don't care about it. It's amazing. Okay, now I got it. I think I understand what you mean. Yeah, that's investigation.
Yeah. Sorry, that is the main thing about investigation. We have to teach them. Teaching the mind we have done in the West, and it has, you know, it's futile. It's in vain.
Make it more worse.
Well, it makes, you know, we have a lot of knowledge. And this knowledge is the thing that prevents us from seeing it.
And thinking
we know
the whole world.
We are better than us. And conceit is nothing else. The last or the, what is it? The third feather, or what is it? The seventh feather. Conceit is nothing else than thinking I'm better, I'm less, or I'm equal. It's not the conceit that we think in our conceit. It's a different kind of conceit. So during the while we're doing practice, if we have a sharp knife and doing the investigation, then we cut along the fetters. And we will cut them up. There is no way to say when the fetters will be break or when the feather will be broken. It's like you start making a tunnel through a mountain. You don't see, you know, while you're working in the tunnel, you don't see any light. You just chip off one stone after the other. And one day, it's the last stone. And don't think, you know, you can do it in a week, or month, or year. I just did the same thing every morning, every day, every night, 7 years in a row. Yeah. Investigation of the body, nothing. Started in the morning and in the evening.
It's really good to put aside any.
You have to put. You have to put your whole life. You have to put the past, and you have to put the future. And that is the good thing. Once you are ordained as a monk, you know that is the way. And especially if you're a Western monkey in Thailand, because the family is far away.
Because the
family is far away. Yeah. All your friends are far away. You are just by yourself. Mm. That's why Thanachan actually liked the Western, because they have gone through a great deal of letting go of their past and attachments to the families and friends. Mm.
In India, they think the same, you know, teachers, meditation teachers, they have a lot of respect for Westerners, because they say, look, they're here without any such support.
Yes, but it's only a few Westerners who survive as well. Most of them will go back. They go back maybe after 2 years, 3 years, or 6 years. Aaron has gone back now.
Well, but he might come back.
No.
He hasn't gone back. Are you sure?
No.
You know, I've seen him before he went. You know, one of those chances, which are never chances.
I spent with Aaron 3 months every night. He came at 7 and left at 1 o'clock in the morning.
But Ajahn Dick said every night he used to go to his guti and talk to him.
After that he came to see him. And sometimes he wasn't even there. So I pretty much know what was going on. Louis, are you like your views? You adhere to your views.
Excuse me?
When you adhere.
Excuse me? I ask questions. I don't have views in regards to other people. Absolutely. I just hear what they say and I take for truth what I've been told, especially by monks.
Yes.
So I believe
but
that.
But you know, the monks have views as well.
Definitely. But
so if you listen to one monk, you know.
I believe you, but I tell also what I heard.
Yes.
So which version is, you know, correct?
So forget both versions. It's not important.
Okay, but poor Aaron.
So
No.
I just want to make a point. It's not important. Aaron is Aaron. But we have to take care about ourselves.
Yes.
If you always think about taking care about other people, this is also a trick of avidya. That's why in this Buddhist practice we have been given the opportunity just to look at ourselves.
Sure.
And not to care what this person is doing or what that person is doing. That was the reason, and Thanachan was very strict. If he saw 2 months fighting, he didn't ask who was the cause and who was...
Both were out.
Both. Immediately. No, not even a question. What they were fighting about or what they were... Or what they were arguing about, you know? Mm. It was arguing, it didn't mean physical fight. They were just us. Both.
Mm-hmm.
He was just not interested. And he says, you know, if you look at other people, and he tells his monks very often, don't watch other. Watch what is going on within yourself.
Sure.
Because there is the cause of everything. And to judge other people, you know, we are not in the position to judge.
Nobody wants to judge him. But you asked me a question, and I said, I've seen him.
No, I didn't ask you a question. You came with your answer. I talked about Aaron, you know, and then...
Sure. Yeah, you're right.
See, and that is always the same thing.
Sorry.
Whatever subject we take up, you know, be it the subject of the book, you know, this book you gave me, it's the same thing. It's always, you know...
But you didn't read it?
No, of course not.
So... What are you talking about?
Well, I looked at the first or two or three sentences.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was enough.
Not enough.
See, you know, now, I want you to look now there. There's something touched in your heart. Is your heart free? Is it open mind? No, it's not. And this I want you to see. I don't want to convince you that I'm right. That this is not my purpose. I want to see that there is something clinging within your heart, and that this just this clinging brings you dukkha, because the heart grabs something, doesn't it? Just right
certainly
now.
It certainly does to a certain extent,
yes,
to certain things, but
yes,
not to this thing.
It doesn't matter. It grabs. And that's why the reaction of this grabbing is the reaction of opposing. Look in the heart, don't look in the mind. Is it a feeling, you know, of pleasantness, of calmness, of coolness? When the heart attaches, it grabs, it contracts.
Sure.
And when the heart contracts, it makes some movement. And when the heart makes some movements, the mind starts to move. The mind starts to act.
Sure.
And then thought, speech, and bodily action.
Sure.
The citta is sitting right. Please, why can't you listen?
Okay.
See how it jumps out. And wants to argue. Who is that wants to argue? When I'm finished, you know, and you have a question and you can ask. But arguing is always peace. And this arguing comes from the view. You have grabbed so long. And you know, I don't accuse you, everybody of you. But you are just a perfect example to show. The others might not dare to take it up. See? It's nothing wrong with you, you know. It's the same principle in every one of us. Or in every one of us. It's this principle, you know. Having some hidden views. And if the teacher is good, it just brings it up. So that the person himself can see how the heart attaches to it. And how it immediately takes up a reaction. But before this reaction comes up, if your mindfulness, you see it. The heart contracts. And then some mind movement will come out. And then comes out of the mouth, and then comes out of wants to support even the mouth, you know, with all this bodily action. And this is quite a few steps, you know. And all whatever. I don't want to say this is wrong or this is right. I want you to see that. And then I ask yourself if this is something that is really peaceful. Quiet, calm. If it's not peaceful, if it's not quiet, calm, then you can be sure that it's clear. Then just chuck them out. Don't allow them to ever interfere. So watch it very closely. When you listen, you know, be always attentive to the heart. What is the heart doing? If you have enough mindfulness, you always hear what the heart is. If the heart starts pumping, you know there's something wrong going on.
I have a question.
And you know why the chitta is so close to them? Because the heart is the prime mover. The physical heart is the prime mover for getting all the activities in the mind and the rest of the self. So the chitta is extremely strong. So it manipulates the physical heart. Look for yourself. I don't say you don't. You have to believe it or not. Look. And when I mean look, you know, look inside. What is happening? How is it happening? This is what I mean, you know. This is investigation. How is it happening? What is coming first? What is coming second? What is coming third? We have to understand the whole train of events. And only if you understand the whole train of events, you can let go. If you catch the train only at the end, you know, then we have to roll it back until the source comes. This is true investigation. This is investigation to get at the source. Not fiddle around with the bead, or with the leaves of the leaves, or with the flowers of the leaves. Grab it at the root. Don't be concerned about all the flowers and the leaves and get down to the stem and get down to it. So if something is happening, you roll it back. Roll it back till you find the soul. And once you find the soul, it's so hilarious. You have to smile or laugh. Or you have to hit your head against the stone because you think how stupid you are. that you have fallen for this. This I want you to understand. So look, look what the heart is doing. When you listen, when you ask questions, look what is the heart. The heart is the primary motor. Because the citta and the heart are very close together.
What is this?
The citta is the controller of the whole body.
There's no fixed place for that.
Of course it is.
Somehow.
See? How do you know? Have you located it already?
It happens here, but there's no... How can you somehow...
How is your heart feeling at the moment?
You know, it affects the whole...
Look,
physical and mental sphere. So
I don't say you're right, you're wrong. Mm-hmm. I only want to look at the process. Mm-hmm. What is going on? How is one thing tricking the next thing? And how this thing is tricking the next. At the moment, all what we can do is look at the results and try to get one step ahead, one step back, to see what happened just before that. There was just a word, I said, and that was immediately taken away. Interesting, isn't it? A word is a sound.
Okay, but then why making so many sounds? I mean, we can just be in silence and that's it. But
it makes
words are there because people can understand certain concepts, and through concepts they can work better, right? More correctly. And this is what I want to do. And people here want to do the same. So if I don't understand correctly
mm-hmm.
the words you are... I ask questions.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the teachers who are clarifying this for us.
Am I clarifying it?
I don't. You're trying to.
So I have to make it clear. Of course I have to use words.
Yeah, me I have to...
And use. You know. If I'm using words, then I have to take up the language. And the language is built on culture.
Right. This is the means we have.
As long, you know, to talk about the ultimate reality within the words of the duality is not possible. All what you can do is one time you put a spotlight on this, and the next time you put a spotlight on it. And even if I say opposite, then I just put the spotlight on the opposite. If we do not understand where the spotlight is pointing to, and it's always pointing to the heart, to the seat of all the troubles, it doesn't matter if I put it from, if I shine it from the back or from the front or from the side, left side or right side. And as long as I use words, I have to use the words. And if my understanding I use, of course, my understanding, how I understand the world. And of course, my understanding differs from your understanding. So you never go, you never try to look at the understanding of the word itself, but always look, what does it point to? So it's the same thing, you're from Italy, so... When you see a sign to Rome, is that Rome? The signs are very different, isn't it? It can be completely the opposite. But they still point to the same thing. Rome. Ah. So understand. So if I use the word understand, I'm just pointing, I'm just hinting. And that's the same as the Lord Buddha. He said, if I can make you understand the thing correctly, you know, there wouldn't be no need for you to practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If the Lord Buddha, he said the same thing. If I can make you enlighten, you know, just by using words, you know, I would have done it.
Yeah.
But I can only point out the way. And the way is a way of walking, the way is the way of practice. And of course I have to use the words. In English, I have to use words English.
And because I'm not, it's not my mother language, I might use some different words that you're accustomed to. And it might mean something else to you than it means to me. So you have to ask, if you don't understand, you have to ask yourself, what does he mean? What does he point to? Or if I tell you now, then go just there. I tell you the principles of practice. I don't tell you, you know, to understand this way or this that way. I tell you the principles of practice. This is how you do it. When you do investigation, this is how you do it. When you do samadhi, this is how you do it. If I could give you the flowers, I would give them. But I can't. I can only point down to the fields where all these flowers are. But you have to make them. And I can point or hint at the obstacles that are in your way. And views. In clinging to words, in clinging to meanings, it's an obstacle. In the beginning, it's a help to make us understand, to make us convinced to go the way. And in the end, it becomes an obstacle. Because it clouds our mind. Our mind, only when it's free, it will see the truth. If we have some ideas about what samadhi is, we'll never get into samadhi. If you let the mind go, then it will go and drop automatically into samadhi. But if we have views and understanding, the same thing for sotapanna or sakadagami. If we have understanding, this is a sotapanna or this is not a sotapanna, or the sotapanna has this experience or that experience, it just makes a complete mess. It doesn't let us really see what is. It doesn't matter. You know, if you've been a sotapanna, if you really have the experience of being a sotapanna or sakadagami, you will know it in your heart that the experience has nothing to do with the word and all the concepts about sotapanna. So you don't lose anything to let go of this. I'm not a sotapanna. I still can go to it. And then you see something is shattering. Something is completely shattering in your mind because you cling to this belief. And then you see, whatever can shatter, let it shatter. Whatever can be destroyed, let it destroy. Because the nature is the nature of the threefold unit, is the four elements. And the four elements are anicca, anatta, dukkha. Impermanent, constantly changing, they are not self. That is not me, that doesn't belong to me, this is not myself. And they are full of dukkha. Full of pain, full of suffering. See either of it. See the pain, see the dukkha, and see anatta. And see anicca. In the West, we are so accustomed to anicca that everything changes, and even we are changing, that we say, oh, that's the way it is. You never really reflect upon anicca. Anicca, our views are changing. 20 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, we saw differently, we view differently. But now we believe in 10 years we still view the same way? Why? Of course it will change. Everything has to change. Nothing lasts. Not our body, not our mind, not our five khandhas. Our five khandhas change all the time. And because it's changing, it's not us. We cling to it. That is the problem. We want sanya. We want our memory. We want our association. We want our thought. And we want our consciousness. And we want our body. Even if we understand, if we have gone to the understanding that the body is not self, we still want this body. Because it brings us so much pleasure. We only see the pleasure. We never see the pain. When we see the pleasure, we forget about the pain. When we have the pain, we're looking for the next kind of pleasure. And that's the way of the mind. We forget, and look.
It's like a child, you know, who's falling on the ground and hits his knee or hits his head and cries, you know, and the mother brings him an ice cream and he forgets everything about it. As if it just that didn't happen. That's the nature of the mind. So why cling to it? Why to cling to something that just passes through? Let it pass through everything. Like clouds. Let it pass through. And understand. Remember what I said about the clouds? How we see figures in the clouds? We see whatever we want to see. We believe whatever we want to believe. But what has it to do with reality? Clouds are clouds. If you see a figure or not, the clouds are still clouds. So let's see the true nature of the clouds. But to see the true nature of the clouds, we have to relieve them of all the figures we see. Otherwise we will never. Just we relieve one figure and we see the next one. First we see a god, then we see a sheep, then we see a warrior, then we see a woman, or then we see a man. Whatever we want to see, that's what we see. Whatever we want to believe, that's what we believe. But it has nothing to do with reality. Reality is just is. It's just this one moment that is, that really exists. And that's where we want to go. Just experience. And that's what in the beginning we have to force the mind to stay on one thing. Not to let the go mind wandering off. And building concept is certainly wandering off. Isn't it? So when you listen to me, you know, building concept is that you actually have to not listen. Isn't it?
No.
So I made the point, I hope I made it clearer. Didn't I? I understand. I don't mind, you know, I don't mind a stupid question. If
thank you very much.
See? See? You know, you caught on again.
No, I mean, I'm laughing, but yeah. Thank you very much. It's not the first time.
If somebody can ask, if somebody is so intelligent to ask a question, even if it's stupid, you know, it shows some sort of intellect.
But if one asks a stupid question?
Of course we ask the question that we want to be relieved. And that this is something, you know, you ask very often. It doesn't matter if it's a book or if it's a person or if it's some views about the Buddhist doctrine. So actually you still haven't got to the clue why this thing is happening. That's why you still ask. Or still trying to make your comment. You still haven't understood it.
And it might
go on, you know. I'm not angry with you. I still respond.
It's the monkey nature.
Yes. I want to see it, and maybe each time you see it a little bit more clearly. Maybe today you see it more clearly. Look at the heart, what the heart, understand the process. The reaction is so fast that even you know. But it has to build up. It's made of the four elements. When it's made out of the four elements, then it groups into the five khandhas. So it's made of the five khandhas. So the reaction, before it comes out of the mouth, it must have passed through vijnana. It must have passed through sanya, through sankhara, and through vedana. So it's a mixture already. You already have a heavy dough that's ready to bake in the cake. You forget the flour, you forget the salt, and you forget the eggs, and you forget the water that you put in to make this dough to rise. And you put it on the oven.
I know it with anger, mm-hmm. reaction. To get this moment before it comes out is very, very difficult to catch.
Yeah.
Just this
break
of second, not even a second.
I'm
how to get this gap between I feel my heart is starting rising and things are happening so quickly that it's very, very difficult to investigate before my reaction is coming.
Yeah. Even in a worry, what we have to have is patience. I was training, you know, half a year every day, you know, looking, you know, where is my mindfulness going? You know, I went to work, you know, where's my mindfulness going? Where are the 8 hours gone? I was, you know, before I sat down on my desk, I was mindful. And it took me an hour after my work, you know, when I sat in practice, you know, to regain mindfulness again. So it took me every day, every night. So where was the mindfulness gone? Okay, tomorrow you try again to set it up during New Year. It took half a year until I got one stop, one breath. So don't worry. It's a way of continuous practice, not letting up. And that's an enormous amount of patience. We want to catch it, and that is all. What keeps us being mindful. How this is happening. In one day you will be able to catch. And once you got the first step, the next step will be easier. The first step is always the most helpful. So when you see the anger arises, then at least you know, close your mouth. That it doesn't come out. And the next time you think, you know, before the muscle movements of the mouth, you know, then stop that. And then next time, you know, you stop, you know, as I said, this whole train, you roll back. So you get a break there and think, you know, just remind yourself what happened just before that. And then the next time you get a break at this point. And then you know, what happened before that? And then you try to get a break at that point. And it takes, of course, time and a lot of patience to come to this. It can take years. It depends on the issue. Once we get to the source, it's gone. So don't worry. The more mindfulness you develop, the easier it is getting. Patience. Yes, of course. Well, if you have anger. Yes. Well, if you're angry with yourself, use it against the one who causes it. Use it. So who made me angry? Then I really get angry. Get angry at the Kilesa Sutra. And then you have a power that is much more valid. Anger is just an energy. So if the Kilesas are using it, it's to our misfortune. If we are using, if we catch this anger and use it to heal something or to throw or make a blow at the enemy. Wonderful. So people who are angry, you know, the moment they learn how to deal with their anger in the proper way, can use it to their advantage. And they will advance faster than people who are much more too quick.
You said, you know, when you have certain things coming up, well, I asked you a question once. Like this anger, you realize it and you react to it at first and you try to cut it and say, no, this, what you're saying now, this energy you're trying to, because you know it's leading to anger or you know that it's going to make it more rise, so you cut it off and say no in your mindfulness. But that is actually reacting to it in a way, isn't it? You think that you're being mindful and not allowing it to rise, but then you cut it off, and then the mind thinks about something else around that.
Yeah, so you really don't help, if I understand you correctly what you're saying. You really don't help. When I say, you know, use the anger and throw it, who caused this anger?
So you're saying, yeah, so when this anger
This is
arises,
one way. This is one way, you know. Every time I talk about a different way, so don't take one way as the absolute way. So if you're angry, you know, and you can't deal with this anger, then at least try to use this energy.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to
throw at the Kilesas who causes this anger.
I'm trying to.
This is one thing. The other thing is, you know, if you can't control it, then look at the source. What brought it all up? There are so many different times, and each time I talk about a different way, that doesn't mean the way I'm talking is the only one that can be heard. There are lots of ways. And the moment you really start your practice, you will find your own ways as well. And you have, in the end, you have to change every moment you have to change the way. Because the more the closer you go to the power of the Kilesas, or you're coming closer to Avijja, the more you have, you know, the faster your tricks run out to work. It holds for 4 or 5 minutes, and then you have to find another way, because they trick you. In the beginning of our practice, you know, a method we develop, you know, may last, if you continuously practice, maybe for 2 months or 3 months, it helps us a lot. And then we stick attached to this practice. And then actually it goes in the opposite direction. Techniques are just techniques. If you're not mindful of what is happening, you know, our technique that we are using can be the technique. The Kilesas are not smart, you know, they're learning with us. They're learning as fast as we do. So if they see, you know, a technique that works against them, they're going to make it to use for them. Mm.
How it happens that people get stuck, and yes, they say, you know, they use it and they progress, they progress, but then at some point they don't go anywhere.
Yes, they're going not. It's yes, of course they're going anywhere. They're going backward.
Okay.
That is why sati, mindfulness, is the absolutely key. Mm. It's the fundament of our practice. If you don't know what we are doing at the moment, you know it's wrong. Mm. You do not practice. The moment we are not mindful, what is really going on? I asked myself in the beginning of my practice, what the hell is going on? Who has the command? That is mindfulness. What is going on, you know? To understand what is going on. If you don't catch what is going on, you will never understand. If you don't see through this magician, we call it Avijja, you will have no way to evade it. Because his tricks are empty. And he learns every day. So he has not a fixed set of tricks.
These days of teaching of Mahabua, but also Ajahn Chah. I remember his books, Satipatthana.
Yes. Well, Satipatthana.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah. The Lord Buddha said it.
Satipatthana. Exactly.
And he said, you know, he plays such an important
practice, yeah.
He plays such an important importance on sati. He said, when somebody has, if some people have sati, mindfulness, for 7 days and 7 nights, without lapse, they will gain within the 7 nights and 7 days enlightenment. Do you see the importance of sati? And if you said, if sati is not as good, it takes you 7 weeks, 7 months, 7 years, or 7 nights. This is the importance of sati. This is our engine running at high speed. Our engine of investigation, our engine of something. That's why it is for us Westerners so important to train this mindfulness. And we train it with samadhi. Being mindful of just this one object. If you can stay with this one object for at least 10 minutes without interruption, then we can turn to investigation. Then investigation is becoming useful. Then the knife is sharp. Then it makes some effect on the fetter. Otherwise, if you just use investigation with a blunt knife, it makes no impact. Sati is the important key. Get to know who is in charge. Because we are not in charge. Most of the time, we are not in charge. Somebody else is working. And it's working so far. That means, you know, sati. As I said before, with a train running by at 400 kilometers an hour, we just see a shade of time. If our sati, that means we are running at the speed of 400 kilometers an hour, we see everything. what is this weapon, what is that weapon, who sits in this weapon, what is he doing? If we don't run at that same speed of the train, we will never catch. We will never understand. This is the sleeping weapon, this is the restaurant, this is this is the locomotive.
Have you seen the movie Matrix?
Yes, I've seen it.
Acha.
But that,
do you remember the in the third movie? There is
third,
the,
I haven't.
No, there is this image of the train and the little girl whose name is Sati.
Mm-hmm.
Who, it's a metaphor.
It's quite intelligent. This movie.
Yeah, it's really beautiful actually. And this little girl named Sati, and she is the only one who can stop the train, right? And so, whoever is waiting, you know, is lost, because he has lost his way. This is the protagonist, can get into the train and finally go to destination, because it's so beautiful. I was so impressed by this, you know. This is the main feature of the movie. In the third part. Yeah.
It doesn't matter, it's slow, you know.
Yeah.
Such is the importance. It's the basis of our practice.
Yeah.
If you don't have mindfulness, whatever we're doing, no? And there's so little to do here. You don't have to worry about the past, you don't have to worry about the future. Whatever you need is provided. Think about it. Whatever you need is provided, so all what you can do, you can put your whole emphasis on that. From the moment you open your eyes. Tanaja Mahabodhi said, you know, it was hell for the first day. He didn't let his mind go. The first day was hell. It was hell. Because the mind wanted to go off all the time. But he kept it to Buddha. Whatever he did, eating in the bath, he kept it to Buddha. The second day was still hell. And the third day was still hell. But it was easy. Until the mind stayed. But if you have no way of doing it, you know, your practice will, you know, just end up. You might see the different colors of the train. But if you cannot get your mind to one point and stick it for a while, so that it cannot run away, you will not be able to understand a lot of things.